You're listening to Sustainable Compliance. My name is Jakob Larsen and I am your host. Today you'll be listening to a recording of a webinar that we did a while ago on some of the aspects of mastering the DPIA process. There is a PowerPoint presentation that goes with this presentation. You'll find a link for it in the show notes. Good afternoon and welcome to this webinar on mastering the very important process of making impact assessments, more specifically data protection impact assessments or DPIA. Today I will be sharing some things with you on the process itself. This is one of two webinars, so in the next webinar in 2 weeks, I'll be sharing some of the things that goes around the process, things like management buy-in and awareness from the organization, collaboration and stuff like that. But today we'll be looking more into steps to take to master this important process. So today the agenda is quite simple. First, we'll look into why do it? Why is this an important process? Why is this important to do? We'll also look into what prompts the process. I think this is a process that you should do quite often in your organization. It's not something that only happens every once in a while. You probably will do it several times yearly. And then we'll look into the process itself. Just to clarify a few things. This is not a masterclass on doing the DPIAs from a legal perspective. So if you're here for a masterclass on the legal aspects of the DPIA, this is not the place to go. This is more from a compliance standpoint, from a standpoint on other matters of this. So compliance and the organizational part of this. So just before we get started, I just want to share a little bit about who we are. White Relations is a GRC solution. We make GRC software. Our solution is specifically suited or tailored for privacy and information security. And in relations to this part of what we're talking about today, I think this is important that often we see that privacy and information security is fragile. The initiatives within the organizations that we see are often fragile. So if somebody quits their job, very often we'll see that that some parts of the program falls apart. If resources are scarce, we often see that the attention within the organization goes from risk 1 month and something else the next month. So it's really fragile. So what we want to help do is turn that fragile privacy and InfoSec into more sustainable programs that can sustain over time. And we do it with what we call structure overview and control. And the structure is basic, actually. We want to document and we want to map our systems and vendors and processing activities. That's the basis of everything. And as you can see, quite a lot of that has been done within our system. And we want it to be collaborative and we want it to be based around recurring tasks. So a lot of collaboration goes on as well. And that's what you can see in the 18,000 plus recurring tasks that are being planned, so that we do everything in a structured order. And on top of that, we believe that privacy and information security should really be based around solid, sustainable workflows. So that's basically what you can do in our software is you can create those workflows that'll work for you. And the DPIA. Now I'll stop talking about wide relations. You can reach out if you want to see how we do it. No problem. Just reach out. But for now, I'll just stop talking about it and just say that the DPIA process is such a workflow. It's something that could really lie under your entire efforts on data protection and privacy. And that's why I think it is so important. So let's just take the sort of helicopter view and look at why the process is important. Businesses and organizations, we impact society in many ways, environmentally, economically, and so on and so forth. And in the last like 10, 15, 20 years, the industry of processing and making use and utilizing personal information has grown so much. And the thing is that if we look at it objectively from the outside, processing personal information is invasive. We do something to people. We affect their lives in sometimes very invasive ways, sometimes less invasive, and it's become economically important. And when that is the case, when we significantly impact society and people, we are accountable for that. So we should, as businesses and organizations, be able to explain, justify, and document what we do. That is the basis of this. And moreover, when we make decisions on using and utilizing this data, we should also make sure that those decisions are sound, that we basically have all the information when we make those decisions, that they're not more invasive than they should be, that they are actually necessary for what we're doing. So the DPIA process should support good decision making. So basically what we're looking into when we go through this process is why do we want to do this? Is it necessary? How does it actually work? Where does information come in? Where does it go out? What are the risks associated with doing this? And that's a lot of the information that we have to have put into a decision-making process. If we're not there, if privacy and data protection is not there, often we'll probably look more at cost-benefit analysis and the business side of it. But we need this information for the decision-making. And basically, that is just good governance. Or maybe put in complete reverse, if we do not know why we're doing it, if we do not think about how it affects our stakeholders, if we do not look into the risks associated, that would be bad governance. So that's basically two things that this process does. Then also it helps us be compliant. So a lot of these things, if you're in the UK or you're in Europe, a lot of the things that you go through, that you do during the DPIA process, that is something you need to do to be compliant. Often, in reality, no DPIA is required. I think that a lot of organizations probably won't ever see a real full DPIA. Some will see one or two, some will see more, but often no DPIAs are required. But we still need to make sure that we've documented why we did not do the DPIA. That is something that I often see that compliance people are not very good at, is documenting why they're not doing something. Because if that changes, we'll need to do a DPIA. And if we've already documented why we're not doing it, it is possible to have that prompt a new process. The ICO, the UK Information Commissioner's Office, also says that it is good governance or good practice to do a DPIA for any major project which requires the use of personal information or personal data. So even in cases where at a peer is not where well, you're not legally bound to do at a peer. It might be a good idea to do it anyway. And I'll come back to why that is really the case. So what should prompt this process? This is my view. So most often new systems will prompt this process. So when we have a new system that where we process personal information, we will be doing something in a different way very often. So we should look into that system and what it does. However, I think often we don't realize that we should also look into sort of new features in old systems. I bet that quite a lot of you right now will have software as a service type systems where AI is introduced, maybe some automated decision making is suddenly introduced because of AI stuff going on. That's the hype right now, but that should also prompt the DPIA process. Also, when we do new processes in old systems, I think often HR systems are probably the best example of that. We get an HR system in that should only do a few things like holding resumes and sending out invites for interviews and stuff like that. And all of a sudden we figure out we could also have criminal records on file here. We could do all sorts of things. And when we do new processes in old systems, sometimes we should also prompt that we do the DPIA process. New laws and regulations could also prompt the DPIA or prompt the process anyway. And this is where it's good to know why we haven't done the DPIA in the first place, because now something might change that should actually prompt it. And as a final thing, when we retire systems that hold personal information, retiring them could also process the information in a new way. So we should probably just make the assessment. I know that it sounds big if you think that a DPIA is this huge 30, 40 page legal document. However, it isn't necessarily. This could be a very quick and quick process. So the big problem here is, how do we know? I think this might be the thing I hear the most from privacy and data protection professionals is, we get into the process way too late to actually be of use. So how do we get to know that we should do this process? Lots of systems are bought without us probably ever knowing. And when we don't know, we get too late into the process. And that is a problem for many reasons, obviously. First of all, we don't have any negotiation power. If we already bought the system, if we already installed it and implemented it and started using it, when we come back and say, okay, we'd like some amendments in the data processor agreement, that is just not going to fly. We need to audit. We'll end up paying for that. So that's the first thing that happens when we get in too late, because we don't know about the systems. Secondly, I think lots of us have experienced pressure from the organization. If something is already implemented, if it's already there, we already have the system, we've been using it for a while. If we want to do a DPIA, more often than not, we're probably told that you can do the DPIA, but it cannot show that we can't do this, because it is, as it says, it's already implemented. And when it's already implemented, if it's illegal, what we've been doing something illegal for a while, if the organization actually listens to us, it could mean that we lose money because we have to do things again. Maybe we have to buy another system. Maybe we have to make changes. Maybe we have to pay for something extra on top or for changes. And the fifth reason to or the fifth consequence of not knowing and getting in too late, obviously, is that we put the organization to risks that it wouldn't otherwise take. If data protection is not at the table, if privacy is not at the table, there will often be much more focus on the sort of on the positive side of the processing and what we're trying to do, the business and the potentials, and not the risks. They won't be taken as much into consideration. So we should get to know this. And I think there are no real easy fixes. This really is very much a cultural thing. And when something is a cultural thing, we really need a lot of moving parts to come together. Often when a culture is good and data protection oriented, we don't really know why. We just did a lot of things and something happened. So I'll just give you a few examples of some of those moving parts that you can try to fiddle around with. Some of them we'll get deeper into next time and have more of a, how can we actually plan for doing this? So getting to know is a cultural issue. And one of the first steps we should take, obviously, is training and awareness. So I think we should have an awareness, we should have a plan, a communications plan, an awareness plan to make sure that people in the organization know what data protection is doing. We are, as a profession, we're used to making awareness training when it comes to things like security issues, how to be aware of this is personal information, what should I do about it? How should I treat it? We're used to that, but we're not necessarily used to making people aware of what we're doing, because what we really need to What we really need is that whenever something new is happening, whenever there's a new system, whenever there's a new process, and people are coming together to implement it, what we really need is for somebody, just anybody really, to raise their hands and go, or raise their hand, not necessarily hands, but raise their hand and go, we need data protection around the table as well. So that's what we should put together. And next time I'll show you how to put such a plan together. And one of the things I will stress right now is not to forget the VIPs. Within any organization, there are some very important people when it comes to this. Somebody who are always in the know, who always knows when something is happening, stuff like that. They can be procurement because they have to procure the purchase. It can be project managers, but it could also be assistants in marketing or so find those VIPs and nurture them, because they will be the ones putting up their hand when something new happens. Also, we should obviously go the more formal way and put it in a policy. We should absolutely have a policy on the PIA process, or when systems come in. It could be more than one process. That could be one for systems onboarding new systems. That could be one for new processes within old systems. But we should absolutely have a policy. One of the things that we've become more and more aware of at Wide Relations lately is that we can write things in a policy. That doesn't necessarily mean that people actually read it. And the fact that they read it doesn't necessarily mean that they change their behavior. So it's important also to think about getting it out there. We've had so many people talking about this that we've actually made up what we call a track policies module in our system, so that we can show at least that people read the policies. So that's another moving part to fiddle around with. I am a big proponent of hybrid organizations when it comes to data protection and privacy, hybrid organizations and ambassadors. Basically, data protection organizations are set up in one of three ways. Either it's a very central, it's everything from one to a lot of people in a privacy or data protection department or compliance department, centrally doing everything. That's one way to do it. Another way is to just have everything out in the business units, so it's completely decentralized. I think that data protection organizations need both very deep knowledge about data protection and very deep knowledge, or broad knowledge actually, about what goes on in the organization. And that's why I really love those hybrid organizations where you have a few very skilled data protection people in a central organization, and you have ambassadors or even people who actually do some sort of data protection. Maybe they audit vendors, or they go through the processing activities, something like that. That is a great way to do it. I've seen it work in so many places. Also, that person will very likely be the one just raising their hand to get you to the table. Also, I think we should think about the process. I'll go through the process of the peers in a little bit. But we want people to get on board with data protection and compliance. And therefore, we want to make a process that is as easy as possible to work with. So it should be, data protection can be complicated, obviously, but we need at least to make it as smooth as possible. If it's just hard to work with, it'll stop people from, even if somebody raises their hand, it'll stop people from coming to us and ask us to be involved. I am obviously a big proponent for having an actual system like White Relations, but it can be done in different ways. I just think we should think about making the process as easily accessible as possible. Buy-in is super important. So management buy-in. I think we still see some top managements who will say that data protection is just something the dog drew in. It's something that this is just something we need to do. It's not important. If you have such a management, I think it's almost impossible to do good data protection. If management is thinking like that, or are thinking like that, you will have to work on buy-in before being able to do good work with your data protection. I've seen people who don't have buy-in from management, but still they want to do like stellar data protection. They just want to be best in class. And that combination is just, it's a straight road to depression and anxiety and stress. And I've seen it too many times. So I want to stress that till we have real buy-in, we probably should lower the expectations of what we can actually do and work on getting that buy-in. That is something we'll be looking into next time as well. And the last point I want to make in getting to know as this cultural issue is that I think we should just sometimes ask, just be going out there and asking. I know that some organizations will be so big that it's probably impossible, but just going down to the marketing department, asking them, so are you looking into anything right now? What have you been looking into for the past? Have you introduced something new? I think that is underutilized in many places, that if you ask, people often have a tendency to answer your question. So I think that's something we should do much more. As I said, next time we'll be looking into the training and awareness part. We'll be looking into the buy-in. But really, I think this is something that we need to be more aware of in data protection organizations, that we need to get out there and tell people why and when they should use us. They don't necessarily have to know a lot about when personal information is personal data, when what type of security we can do, stuff like that. We don't necessarily have, but somebody has to put up their hand and say we need to get data protection on board. Otherwise, it's just very hard to get to know the things that are happening. So let's dive into the process and why it might be the process within a data protection organization. So in my point of view, there are basically two things that we do in data protection. One is what I would call recurring tasks. It's a yearly cycle, a yearly wheel of things that we just need to do to keep the program afloat, so to speak. So what we do is we'll have to audit vendors. We'll have to revisit our risk assessments. We'll have to look at our processing agreements every once in a while. We'll have to make sure that we evaluate if we have data breaches, stuff like that. It just goes in a sort of a yearly cycle. And then we have all the new stuff, new systems, new ways of doing things, new laws and regulations. And that is a process where we need to efficiently and effectively make sure that a new system that a new system, for instance, is implemented into the program so that it becomes a recurring task, so to speak, to work with. And the DPIA process is just that. It really is a process to make sure that we get the compliance done so that we can work with it in the program. I've just tried to draw what happens, what kind of process we're trying to make work. And we'll all have to make bigger or smaller changes to make it culturally work where within our organization. But basically what we do is that there's something I call it a new shiny thing. It's probably a system that comes in. The first thing we do is that we make a quick pre-assessment. And that pre-assessment, we're trying to assess whether we need to do a full DPIA or full data protection impact assessment or not. And if we have to do that, then we'll have to do it, obviously. That's what is happening in the yes column. More often than not, we will not have to do a full DPIA, but we still need to document why we're not doing it. And I think this might be the most important part of this, is that we will still have to do a ROPA. So we'll still have to do a register of the processing activity that we are doing, and we'll still have to do risk assessments. And a lot of that is actually what is in the DPIA. So it's not that if we don't have to do a DPIA, we have to do nothing. So it's really a good process in many respects. Let's look into the pre-assessment. So what we're trying here is we're trying to determine whether the processing we are about to do, whether it's likely to result in high risk to individuals. So, and that is a lot of things. It could be physical harm. It could also be loss of rights, data protection rights, privacy. It could also be the loss of right to freedom of speech. It could be a lot of things. This is basically what is in the GDPR and the UK GDPR. But so this is basically what we're trying to assess here. To make it easy, the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK has made a black list of systems that we always have to do it's systematic and extensive profiling. It's automated decision making. It's when we carry out surveillance on a big scale. What you see here is just a screenshot from our system where you can just see the blacklist, basically. So that's what we should look at first. Is it on the blacklist? And if it's on the blacklist, it's easy. We will always we'll just have to do a DPIA. Sometimes it won't be on the blacklist, but we'll still need to do it. So we should still consider it if we're using evaluation and scoring, automated decision-making, systematic monitoring. If we process sensitive data, process data on a large scale and data concerning vulnerable people, kids, for instance, children, and if we use new technology like biometrics, stuff like that, if it has more than one of these characteristics, we'll probably need to do a DPIA anyway. So this is the pre-assessment that we are trying to make as a first step. And I think that more often than not, we'll not have to make, we'll not be legally obliged to make a DPIA. We should be aware that the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office, but also other DPAs will say that if in doubt, we should absolutely do a DPIA. But this is the pre-assessment that we do. And as I said, if we are not obliged to do it, and if we choose not to do a DPIA, that should be documented. If you have a system, it's fairly easy because you already documented it through the system. If we do the DPIA, we'll have to go through a process to do that. And it's basically, this could be a whole webinar in and of itself. And if you would like us to go down the technical and or the legal side of doing DPIAs, please do write, and I'll try to find a super duper expert on that to help us figure that one out. But basically, what we need to do is that we need to really get to know what we're doing, why we're doing it, what the context is, where we're getting the information, where it's going. So we really need to do a deep dive on the what of this, and also on the why. So is this really necessary? Could we do something else that would be less invasive? So we could to be less invasive and have the same type of results. That's one of them. But that really is something that we already know, because we have to do not in the same kind of depth, but we still have to do the same kind of thing when we do the register of processing activities. So we still have to explain what we're doing, why we're doing it, what our legal basis is, what is the context and stuff. We'll have to do that in the ROPA as well. So that's not new. It's deeper, but it's not anything new. The second part of the other part of the DPIA is the risk side of it. So we should really do a deep dive on what kind of risks will be associated with what we're doing. And probably because we're doing a DPIA, there will be high risk in some areas of what we're doing. So we should also look into measures to reduce the risk to an acceptable level. However, again, that is something that we know from our sort of day-to-day job. Yes, this is way more risky, but we still have to do risk assessments and mitigate risks whenever we have a new system or a new process that we have to implement. So this is something that we know how to do. We're just going to have to do it more in depth when we do a DPIA, and we have to collect it in one place for the DPPAs to look at. The thing that is different between our day-to-day and the DPIA is, apart from the depth and the rigor, is that we should involve stakeholders. So there's a consultation process in the DPIA. So first, we need, if we have a DPO, we need to ask him or her and have their input. And we have to document what their input is. And if we don't do what they tell us to do, we have to document and explain why. Moreover, we should, if it's possible, we should involve other stakeholders. So for instance, data subjects or somebody else who is affected by the process, we should consult with them. We can do that in many ways, but we should consult with them or their representatives. If it's employees, it could be the unions, or if you're in medicine or pharma, it could be a patient organization. So you should involve relevant stakeholders and have their input on the thing you're doing. And again, document what they're seeing and also what you think about it. And if you want to do what they are telling you or asking you to do. I think that would be relevant in many cases, even without having to do the DPA. Asking our stakeholders what they think about what we're doing. We are very much data protection. We're very much in the trust business. I think we should get better at talking to the data subjects and those who are affected by what we do, just to get their input, and just to get to know what they are actually thinking about what we do. But that is for another time and place. So this is basically the process that you would have to make work in your organization. So whenever something new happens, there's a pre-assessment that you should quickly get. Is this DPA worthy, or should we just do our normal day-to-day business and get the documentation straight? It's fairly easy to do. However, it requires, in my opinion, often a cultural change within the organization so that you get to know these new shiny things, so that you get to know when new systems are being implemented and new processes are coming about. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that it requires a systematic approach, because too many organizations will do the DPA in the head of the data protection professional. So I'll go, okay, this is, no, I won't be doing it, and never document what we are doing. So I think those are the two things that you should really get good at. Also, because you probably won't be doing that many full-scale DPAs. If you want to see how we do this in our system, please do reach out to us. You can always book a meeting and we can talk about both the process and how it's handled in our system. So reach out, go to whiterelations.com and learn more. Next time, I will be talking about some of the things that we've touched upon and that you have to make work with this process. First of all, how to tailor a plan to secure buy-in from management. As I said, I think this is all important. If we don't have buy-in from management, it's really difficult and an uphill battle to do any data protection, let alone a good DPA process. Then we're looking at how to make a real plan, a solid plan to bring the data protection function to the awareness of the organization. I think the organization should know more about what we do so that they are able to involve us at the right time. Because if they don't do that, we're relying on policies. And in 9 out of 10 organizations, that just doesn't cut it. So we should... I'll show you how to make a communications plan and how to get that word out. And then the last thing we'll talk about next time is that DPAs and DPA processes really are about collaboration. You'll need to have a lot of technical knowledge. You'll need legal knowledge. You'll need business knowledge. You'll need knowledge about acquiring systems. So you'll need a lot of people around the table. And I'll show you how to collaborate with IT, procurement, and the business and the organization. And next time is in 2 weeks. We'll be sending this one out so that you can revisit it. We'll do that. And at the same time, we'll tell you when the next webinar is on. I hope you enjoyed it. Maybe some of you asked questions. If you did, one of my colleagues promised to throw them my way. So I'll just have a look 1 second. No questions. Then I will just say thank you very much for coming by this afternoon. As I said, please do reach out if you want to talk to us about anything really about the DPO process. Obviously, we'd like to show you how our system works, but we can definitely talk about how to make it work within your organization as well. So please do reach out. And if you have ideas for other things you'd like to go through in a webinar, then please reach out and let us know. Have a wonderful rest of the day. See you soon.
You've been listening to Sustainable Compliance. I'm your host, Jakob Larsen. And if you want to get in touch with us, please feel free to reach out. If you want to talk about something you've heard on the podcast, or you want to see Wired Relations in action, please do not hesitate. Go to wiredrelations.com and you'll find all the contact information there.